Hello and welcome back to All My Darlings, where we are reading Harp Song for a Radical, The Life and Times of Eugene Victor Debs. We're on page 81, chapter 26. A little bit longer chapter. Like 2 pages. Wittling was interested in all forms of utopias of a millennial nature, not only the pacifist Oneidists, with their communal weaving looms and animal traps which made them seem, to some of their observers, no different from asters and goulds. Or goulds? G-O-U-L-D-S. But also other utopian experiments which he had seen or of which he had heard along the zigzag turkey trail to Buffalo. As he was also to become an expert analyst of utopian alchemies, which had been brought into transient being by man's primordial dreams, and by comparison with which his dreams, still evolving in the great vat, would be a science without flaws, such as had been that of Owenites, St. Simonians, Fuhrerites, Millerites, Brisbaneites, Shakers, Rappites, Mormons, and the Icarian followers of Itne Kebe. Although he, with his essentially imitative mind, was somewhat under the spell of all. But his objections were to those false prophets who had stolen his principles and had robbed them of their meaning while presenting them as if they were their own, or had been handed down by God, who operated on high, had no need of Wittling as his low mediator and interpreter and instrument. Before leaving Upper New York, he had asked that his mail be forwarded to Colony Comunia, Elcador Post Office, Clayton County, Iowa, and thus had shown as great a faith in the uncertain mail service and any letter ultimately reaching him as he had shown in his own ability to keep this promise to deliver Utopia to his fellow men with the help of the working men who would shoulder the burden with him. Wittling's ports of call on this journey into the still unknown and perhaps unknowable many-leveled American interior, with his bags of promissory pamphlets on his back as he tried to enroll exiles in his League of Deliverance, included the already beautifully burgeoning paradise of capitalists and bankers on the shores of Lake Erie, the future home of John Hay, the future secretary of Abraham Lincoln. In Cleveland, Wittling had happily come upon a cooperative tailor shop where the women had done the sewing of cloth with needles and threads and had punched buttonholes by hand when the men had failed. Among the hundreds of migrant German workers to whom he spoke in Cleveland, many not staying to hear him out, for they were drawn to a picnic with harps and flutes and songs in the flower-starred grasses of a tree-shadowed woodland about 6 miles away, the poor man with his promises of bread to all was unable to gather for the Workers' Association more than 15 first payments, which for a variety of reasons, including both mortality and further flight, might not be followed by second payments. At this time, the gold rushers still trickling on, as well as those migrants who were in search of the gold which might be made in growing corn in the western lands, then in the mournful process of being taken away from the red men whose heads, now more rarely seen than in the immediate past, were crowned with all kinds of feathers, including feathers of roosters, turkeys, swans. Wittling had passed through Sandusky on his way to Toledo with his own versions of Jesus Save Me, Cooperative Brotherhood pamphlets, and Arbetivirine enrollment propaganda, long before it became a saying in that part of the world of a man who was dying or was about to die, that he had taken the old Sandusky train with its lonely whistle upon a long last journey into the burning beehive glow of the setting sun upon a far western horizon. Among the benefits promised by Wittling to those who would join the Arbetivirine, where there were 15 at Sandusky, a small sheaf in relation to potential hundreds, where pension funds for investment in cooperative stores and other fraternal enterprises, and burial funds which might be called sinking funds, as they were for the purpose of burial grounds and coffins for those who had completed their cycle on earth, or had not completed it, and money, also for funeral wreaths and for widows and children who might be left to starve when the winter wolf howled. Brother Wittling, flushed with hope, had promised, "We shall come to power along this road if only the leaders will remain steadfast." He was speaking in an Ohio that contained at this time the most sinister foreign-born anarchist a capitalist king of kings or emperor could have imagined. A little dwarf child worker, with a hair lip, an unruly swirl of corn-colored hair, and violet blue eyes fringed with unusually long lashes, who had been brought from Germany to this country when an infant, in arms, and now, about 3 years old, and wise as an old man who never had been young, had walked before his cruel, law-abiding, God-fearing, religious father, with his bare baby feet bleeding on the ground as he helped to sow seed by hand on a scrappy little patchwork farm and make sure that no seeds were left uncovered by clods for the marauder birds. The name of the little boy, with the thatched hair and the pointed face and the violet eyes swimming in tears, as he was forced to look down, down, down upon the earth and up, up, up to the sky, was John Peter Altgeld, future governor at Springfield, Illinois, whose way was to be that of a transcendental and yet secular socialism, escaping the boundaries of self-interest by allegiance to the altruism that might be identified with otherness. A token of success restored Brother Vitling's almost failing, flagging spirit in Detroit, Michigan, where all the cabinet makers, not one dissenting squeak among them, not one door or drawer which refused to open, had joined in one body as if to point the way to the future when the cooperative brotherhoods would be joined in one universal body of which the head would quarrel not with the hands would quarrel not with the feet. To the city of Chicago upon the shores of Lake Michigan, Brother Vitling also came with his cry of distress to the men of labor and sorrow, and his wounds and balm, and his cures for the ills and o's of the body of society which might be brought into harmony through his economy if only enough dollars could be found to give a start to a living example of the cooperative brotherhood, which he could lead us peacefully toward the pleasant pasture lands of socialism, needing no reins but faith in his magical compass and touchstone in the awakening of age-old instinctive ideas. Chicago contained within its amorphous borders slaughterhouses and the old Fort Dearborn and the factory of the manufacturer of the automatic harvester for which Cyrus Hall McCormick held the patent rights and which he had brought here in 1847, the year before the gold rush into the land of the western sunset, and which would make wheat the king of American grains. It was said, Cyrus McCormick, that he was such a tough old rooster that if you threw him into a pot and boiled him to broth, the devil himself would not sup of it. He was the son of a farmer and part-time weaver of stout Presbyterian faith and inventive genius, whose various inventions, threshing machine, a hydraulic machine, a hemp-breaking machine with a peculiar horsepower adapted to it, had never been thrown upon the market for transmutation into such gold as would come to the sun as time went on. In the rapidly developing Chicago of boom and bust to which Vitling came, there had been thousands of permanent or transient workers in various crafts and trades, including those of teamster, carpenter, shipwright, stonemason, shoemaker, tailor, button-puncher, sailor, wig-maker, hatter, dress, and mantua-maker, wedding-gown-maker, wagon-maker, milkman, gunsmith, water-borer, bricklayer, cradle-maker, bridge-smith, or decoy-maker, dealer in iron and nails, salesman of counterfeit paint, panaceas, which, like a utopian concern, promised to cure all men's wounds and ills, preacher and barber and waiter and auctioneer and pawnbroker, baker and brewer. But the Chicago of boom and bust had fallen upon hard times for the poor, and the economic ground was as barren for them as dust returning to dust, where those who had no shelter slept out all night upon the sand dunes as if they were mummified, and might not awaken when someone poked with his stick. Some awakened and cried. Brother Vitling was able to bring into his harvest only one member, and that was a brewer. In the largely German city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which had already become a place of the rising German brewery kings, the golden liquid assets of the rich were increased by the payment of low wages to the poor German workers, for whom the prices of beer and bread were kept cheap. They had their hymn-singing societies, but no money for coats, hats, shoes, and other benefits, and no money for a city lot upon which to build a dwelling place where but a few years before had been a refuge for thousands of wild mallards and other birds of passage. Brother Vitling had had bad placer's luck in Milwaukee in trying to gather money for his wound and balms, and his arbitrivirane and his plans for the cooperative brotherhood. Very few farmers throughout the primitive frontier state of Wisconsin, as Brother Vitling found out upon this missionary expedition, ever saw currency of any kind except for the silver dollar, which was briefly held in the palm of the farmer's bleeding hand once a year. And that was at the harvest time when it was all that was left over for him, and after the payment of high prices out of low wages at the country store, for those necessities of life which he could not produce. The silver dollar was slippery as greased lightning, and was not to be kept long in his hand. When did one silver dollar become $50? Would it become $50 when passed from hand to hand to 50 toilers of the soil for the payment of 50 debts, which would leave each one as bankrupt as before? And up to his ears in marsh mud and sinking fast into that long winter sleep. All right. Yep. I'm going to record tomorrow and then I'm going to work on some of the historical links for the post on Substack. And then, yeah, probably won't be back until the first, not the first. I'll start with paper pills on the first, and I probably won't be back to record until the 4th of October. No, 3rd. Sorry. Excuse me. 3rd of October. Okay. So I think that's it for now. Thank you for listening. Hope you're doing well.